The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Anthony Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ringrose comes through. Oh, that is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
Hello and welcome to the Hard Yards. We are episode number 60 today and for with a nice quiet weekend of rugby action. Mixed bag for the Irish provinces. Leinster booked their place in Bilbao after the win over the Scarlets on Saturday, but Munster could not make it an All-Ireland affair on Sunday in Bordeaux against a very, very impressive Racing team. To discuss the action, I'm joined by Sports Joe reporter Pat McCarry. Pat, how are you?
Good, thank you.
And Mr. James Downey. Jimmy, how are you?
Morning.
We're delighted to say that Dunica Ryan will be joining us on the line later from France. And fresh have his return from injury and back from France. Keith Earls will be in studio to chat with Pat McCarry a little later. So, lads, fair play. You called it. I went for romance with a Leinster-Munster final. You didn't. You're the hard hand of reality and you said Racing would do it. Well done, lads.
No pleasure.
Obviously, we both would have loved that romantic final of Leinster-Munster, but look, wasn't to be. But I guess if we're going to jump into it straight away, it's like how good were Leinster, you know? They were absolutely superb. Everything they did.
It was amazing to watch. It was fascinating to watch a rematch of last season's Pro 14 or Pro 12 as it was, semi-final. Leinster had learned all the lessons and my God did they turn up.
Yeah, it was brilliant to see, and like having been to the Saracens game and then the Scarlets game, so the quarterfinal, the semi-final, like the Saracens game seemed much more gladiatorial, like, you know, there was just big collisions and guys smashing into each other, but Scarlets just got blown away, and apart from maybe the first five or ten minutes, it looked like it might have been a contest. Tadhg Byrne had a good turnover at the start, then Leinster just put the foot down, and the likes of again, someone wouldn't get that much credit normally, someone like Devon Toner was clearing out way beyond the ruck as well, and then anytime they were going to go over the breakdown, they just got absolutely, the Scarlets boys got bashed out of the way, and then you had one of the best games in Europe you'd ever see from like someone like Johnny Sexton, who just controlled everything, and the boys kind of called the shots up front, but then Sexton, just the plays he called on the hoof were absolutely brilliant.
It was game plan play to a T, like, you know, I think everything that Leinster did came off. The huge threats for Scarlets, you're talking about, everyone had mentioned during the week about the back rows, and actually they were nullified completely. And you're talking as well, we spoke before, with Tadhg Byrne in there as well, and Shingler over the ball, and Barkley and Davies, they were nowhere. They were absolutely blown away. The speed of ball that Leinster got was crazy. It was like you're looking at 4 to 6 seconds, I think it's 4 seconds, to get a defensive line organised. But Leinster were just, as Pat had mentioned, like Devon Toner clearing past, everyone knew their jobs, everyone was taking one player, one defender was taking out one player, and when you get speed of ball, regardless of how good your defence is, you can't cope with that consistently, lads running at the line like that. And but also their ability to retain possession was huge.
We have a clip here of Johnny Sexton speaking after the match about that game plan.
Look, the game plan today was probably what we were meant to do last year. You need to play a little bit different against the Scarlets. You need to be more direct because they've got 14 guys in the line on their feet, and you've got to punch your holes in their defence as opposed to trying to get around them. You're never going to really get around them, and I think at times last year we tried to go around them and we got caught out, and today we picked our moments when we went wide a lot better. So but again, you can try and go through them. If you don't have the calibre of ball carry that we had, well then it won't work. So fairness to the forwards, they fronted up time and time again, and Robbie as well.
So that kind of sums up what you were saying there. But I thought it was a fascinating piece that he said, that you have to change what you're doing to play against the Scarlets. You can't just go wide because they love that. You go straight down the middle, and Leinster went straight down the middle. The Fardy try after halftime, I think it was the 49th, 50th minute.
Yeah.
When you saw the carry first by Sexton, a little half break. And then it was Dan Levy's one-handed carry, which was just absurd, followed by James Ryan carrying it almost to the line, pops up to Fardy gets over. That was a straight line, and it was just amazing to see that power.
Yeah, and I think Johnny touched on it there with Robbie Henshaw coming in there and straightening the line. He ran some great lines, you know, really put that Scarlets defence under pressure, with the Scarlets bringing a bit of line speed as well. And Johnny says 14 in the line, which is quite interesting because Leinster normally play with 14 in the front line as well and leave the full back exposed at the back. So it's kind of like, right, try and beat this gun round here, you know, but it's very, very hard. But if you can get that momentum that they have to get in behind it, it's very hard to defend. But even close to the line, I thought some of the Leinster forwards were very smart, and if they didn't reach the line, they actually recoiled and placed the ball perfectly back, as opposed to having that extra yard to stretch for the line, and they scored the next phase. A lot of times, how many times do we see forwards kind of get close, they go for it, and it's not on. They got close and they recoiled and they'll score next phase.
It's very, very quick decision making in those areas.
Yeah, if you're not going to make it, like, get out of there, you know, get it back and we'll score next one. It's very selfless, to be honest.
That first half of rugby in the stadium, Pat, I mean, there was only one team in it.
Like Scarlets, they just were trying to keep in touch with penalties, but they just were not in the game at all. And just Ryan, just his power and leg speed of just driving through tackles as well, and punching holes as well. And then a guy who actually I thought had a great game was Fergus McFadden as well. And people would often wonder, you know, why he's getting picked for some of these games, because you'll have the likes of Larmour or even Adam Byrne, who was playing Leinster A at the weekend. Why is McFadden there? And McFadden, apart from one restart that he knocked on, had a brilliant first half, like just scurrying, and he was ferocious, and the kick chases he was going after. And it was a Leinster tactic, like an Ireland tactic, where they're putting high balls up, and Leinster didn't want to win the ball, they just wanted to put Scarlets under pressure, and McFadden was brilliant for that. And everybody was on the money. And a guy who maybe you mentioned in there after in the second half, Levy, who made a lot of carries, made a lot of bursts in the first half, he was just all about just doing his work around the ruck and the breakdown as well. So everybody knew what their job was. But there was a good one. I think Charlie Morgan in the Telegraph spotted one. As you said, they defend with 14 on the line, but Sexton at one stage spotted Steph Evans was over the wrong side, and he just pumped up a high ball. And then that ended up McFadden getting close to the line. I think then didn't Ryan finish it off there? It's just they're making plays just, you know, on the spot, and everybody knew what they were up to as well. Like, so it's, you know, like we'll touch on it later on again with Munster. Munster would have like a plan A, possibly a plan B. Leinster were just playing six or seven plays, you know, if they wanted to call this, call that, and everybody knew what they were doing. So I think the word that a lot of people mentioned was just a machine and relentless, and it was just so impressive. Like Scarlets had, they were out on their feet, you know, after 40-50 minutes,
and their percentage plays that they're playing, but they're the right percent. And like, if Johnny's making a crossfield kick, you expect, or he knows that Ferg's going to put the guy on the pressure, yeah, like, you know, and regardless of, he can make a bad kick into a good kick with a great chase, and Leinster do that. When they do make decisions, it's very calculated, it's simple, and everyone knows their jobs. And again, I think in converse to when we talk about later on Munster about guys knowing their jobs, I think it's Leinster are, as you say, a machine, and it's going to be tough to stop them.
Robbie Henshaw's entrance back into rugby after that unfortunate injury against Italy in the act of try scoring, that was something else.
It's just like, I know last week I said that, oh, Robbie was back training, and I was like, not a chance. Like, you know, I was like, he's had a shoulder reconstruction 10 weeks ago. 10 weeks ago, he was getting oxygen at the side of, yeah, like, you know, and I was like, no way. Like, you know, to come back to that intensity of a game, he was superhuman effort from him. Unbelievable. Everything he did, he tackled ferociously. Again, I think the partnership with him and Ringrose, they dovetail perfectly between each other in attack and in defence. Again, I think, I don't want to take away from Robbie, but I think Ringrose defensively astute again, and how he goes about things makes very difficult things look really easy, and people take that for granted, I think, in what he does. But Robbie, I thought, was immense, given the fact that he hasn't played rugby in 10 weeks, and to come back with that performance. Like, as I say, I was like, oh no, he wouldn't put him in, I'd leave Issa there, and but right decision, and fair play to him, hats off.
Yeah, it was a nice moment actually, speaking of Ringrose, where Scarlets had an overlap, and Ringrose is just doing this thing where he's almost like Sexton did against Scotland, where he's backing off and backing off, and he's making them make the decision. And then when they finally went to pass it, he sprinted forward and forced a mistake and got a turnover from them. Like, but like we were talking to Stuart Lancaster last Monday, and he was talking about Henshaw hitting these record markers and best speeds ever, and I kind of said to him afterwards, like, that's all well and good, but how about his shoulder, like, you know? And Lancaster said we wouldn't put him in if he wasn't 100%, but Henshaw had no problem testing that shoulder early on and just showing everybody that it's good. So yeah, I don't know what kind of how they taped it up or what they did to him, but there'll be more people going in, you know, can I have what Robbie Henshaw had?
It's those obviously the backroom staff in Leinster have done a great job. It's those return to play protocols that you'd normally hear about for concussion, but there's a map, a roadmap of how you come back from an injury, and I guess they'd kind of penciled this one in this date, so if they could get him back and if he'd reached each marker each time, they'd tick it off. And they will have tested the shoulder, he will have tackled, of course, like, and it's not as if he's hitting bags, he would have gone live tackling. How are you feeling? Earlier on the week,
bring
okay,
a couple of academy players, right?
Yeah, exactly. How aggressive do we want to go? It's not you're going to have one of the biggest players running at you. You ease into it, but it's just confidence, really. And look at the confidence that he brought on in that weekend. And as I say, I'd applaud it to the backroom staff, but especially to him for working that hard to get back.
So we've got a lot of players who've had a lot of success this season already involved in that game, but they're greedy for more, and Rob Kearney spoke about that after the game.
You get really greedy, you know, you want more. You know, we're in a club, we're surrounded by so many ambitious competitive people. The team is doing really well tracing for silverware, and you know, there's nothing worse than having to watch that from a couch somewhere else from not being involved. So you know, you're a part of something really special, and winning is, you know, it's such a great feeling. And the more you win, the more you want to win, and the more trophies you get, the greedier you get for more. You know, so I suppose, you know, that's what built it, greed in a nice way.
Yeah, so that was Rob Kearney. What does that remind me of?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit.
So, Rob Kearney in braces, contrast collar and cuffs, big Gordon Gekko. But he's right. When you're at this stage of your career, you have to be greedy, because you do not know when these chances are going to come again. And you know the seasons where you haven't had the chance, and this is their chance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you get to the stage of your career, when you're at the end and you kind of want to, well, he's not at the end, but like when you want to actually, like, you're judged on what you win when you finish, you know, and like, as opposed to just, oh, you've done great in a couple of games, it's actually, right, what have you won? You go, well, I've won all this, I've won all that. And Rob's been lucky enough to have been on numerous teams that have won an awful lot of silverware, and he just has that, you can hear it in his voice. He has that hunger, but it's the Leinster, the squad, I think, as well, that drives the standards, that push for near perfection. I think that you have someone in who comes into the squad and they have to add something, they've got to add value onto the side, be it something off field, on field, wherever it needs to be. They have to bring value to the team, and to have that winning mentality and to have that drive when you do win. I think I haven't won that much, if anything. I'm trying to think. I've won a Pro 14 or Pro 12, but like, it's to keep having that hunger year in, year out, to keep coming back, to keep pushing himself. And Rob's had, what a year he's had as well, in credit to him. Like, he's been there, he's been the forefront the whole time. When naysayers come in and said Larmer's going to be there, or he's going to be out,
yeah,
he bats him away quite easily, to be honest, you know. And his performances consistently have been superb. He's in a great season,
and he was carrying the ball and he was going into contact with violence, you know, with extreme aggression. And in common with everyone at Leinster, it was like, drive hard, we're not looking for offloads here, especially in that first half. We are going into contact hard, and there'll be people with you.
Yeah, you'll be backed up. Yeah, that's a big thing as well. And yeah, you kind of mentioned that about the lads coming in as well. It's just that, like, look at the two boys who kind of really stepped up this season, Levy and James Ryan. Like, we spoke to Todd Byrne after the game, and he was saying James Ryan is being flagged as a prodigy from the age of 15, and he said he played for him even when he was at Lansdowne. Like, Ryan would be coming in to train with the older lads, and like, these two guys are coming in, and they're just coming in and taking jerseys off people. And Levy is a guy who's, if you ever talk to him, like, or you hear him talking, like, he's so confident in himself as well. Like, so you have a guy like that coming in, and he's like, that's my jersey, and he's backing up performances. Then the older lads are going, I have to, you know, like, we've got something special here and we could win something this season. So sometimes, I'm sure, James, you probably would see that as well. It's like a feeling sometimes kicks off in a squad where, like, this is, we've got a good team. We have to make this count.
Yeah, no, I think completely. And I think you know when you have that buzz around the group, that confidence is there, of that we're not going to lose this, you know, and this is ours for the taking. And regardless of what's going on externally, internally, we 100% believe in what we're trying to do. And you can see that with Leinster. Everything they do, they're doing well at the moment. And it's just getting better and better, you know. And like, as you say, when you have a young guy coming in, driving standards, pushing the rest of the senior players who aren't going to be complacent, who aren't going to be lax and rely on, oh, look, I've been here, I've done it. It's like, actually, no, hang on. If I'm off 2 or 3%, the next person's going to take my spot. So it's bringing the level up each week.
So we talked last week, coincidentally, about foreign imports and the best foreign imports. Scott Fardy, Jim, you just talked about people come in and they must add something. Fardy has added something.
Yeah.
We've seen on the field, he's now transferred into the back row. That isn't, at the start of the season, we just said, he'll lock, whatever, he's going to the back row. But it's because of James Ryan. Have to fit James Ryan into this team, and with all the back row injuries, yeah, it's great. But Fardy has brought something, both Jonathan Sexton and Rob Kearney were talking about that as well after the game on Saturday.
Yeah, I think absolutely, he was outstanding today. You know, he's one of those four lads who are nominated for player of the tournament as well, so he's shown that consistency right throughout. Well, I think the most impressive thing about Scott is probably off the field what he's doing to the younger guys and his coaching and mentoring to some of those. But the manner in which he turned up today was incredible, and, you know, a massive credit to him.
Yeah, Rob Touchnet has been immense on and off the pitch, through the Six Nations, even through November Internationals. And that's why it's so important that the clubs sign these quality foreigners and professionals, because I don't think James Ryan would be the player he's been this season without Scott Fardy, you know, helping him along, and you know, those back row guys as well. He coaches them, you know, gives them advice, and he's been brilliant, and he's had a huge impact on the group. He doesn't train as hard in the gym as Brad Thorne does. I don't think he goes to the gym, actually. Like, guys come in, different guys come in over the years. Obviously, East has had the biggest impact of anyone, Contepalmi, on me and on the group. You know, the list goes on, but it's important that these guys that come in are quality players, obviously, and individuals as well. And he's been outstanding for us.
So, again, this is Scott Fardy. It's not just about the on-field impact, it's about the off-field. He's essentially acting as another coach to those players. Did you ever come across players like that in your career, Jimmy, who essentially were auxiliary coaching staff?
Yeah, when I was here listening to the clip there, I just thought of my last year playing with George Smith in Wasps. Everything, he was coaching guys at breakdown, he was adding value consistently in meetings, standing up, even nearly educating the coaches and some sort of things. But at that time, Eddie Jones had brought him in to assist with England as well, just specifically for breakdown, which is obviously the high regard that they hold him in. But like, he was off field, he was an unbelievable bloke. Like, on field, he'd lead by example, putting his body on the line. He was concussed numerous amount of times and was just always thereabouts, you know. But driving standards, like, and really increasing things and what he's learned and put it onto the younger players, and exactly what the lads have said there. You can see Fardy's adding influence off the field as well, and it's kind of like your Rocky Elsoms and your Brad Thorns that Leinster have signed. Leinster have been very astute in how they've signed their foreign players, and I think Johnny mentioned it there, that they have to add that certain value when they come here. Like, these foreign players, they're only allowed to sign a few, so they have to be exactly right, because if they don't, we notice them, you know, and it's a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, because what was it, Fardy was there ahead of the game, and it was, somebody talked about it as like, oh, do you want to leave Leinster with an extra star over the badge and the personal legacy, and he was just like, this, like, personal legacy, this means nothing to me, like, I'm just here for the team. And but it's the way even Jemison Park and Scott Fardy talk about it. It's like, they just know that they're here to add to the squad, and they'll be used whatever they want to be used. And like, Jemison Gibson Park was talking to us after the game, and he was just almost saying, it's just like, I'm there just filling a gap, and if Luke is back, I'm happy to step back again. Like, and you'd actually believe it when you hear him. Like, and like that's what Fardy is there for as well. It's like, we're here to help Leinster go on to the next stage. It's like, it's not about us. We're just there. And I don't know how you find lads like that, but they've done well.
But isn't that the isn't that what the PR person wants them to say? You know, it's like, I'm just here to help the ball club, God willing. You know, you mentioned scrum half slot. We've talked about it in numerous weeks. There's obviously the James Noe knock on as well.
Is it
trite to say that anybody could have looked good behind that Leinster pack performance at the weekend?
Not really. But like Jameson Gibson Park did, he just kept things ticking over so much and just picked the right passes, and he was just always there, getting like just wrenching the ball out. He knew it was, as James was saying, it was all about like quick ball, quick kick, like keep it going as well, like in the next man out as well. So he did exactly what he had to do. Like, he knew that you know, he wasn't going to be like a maybe Conor Murray or Luke McGrath making his own snipes or doing these kind of smart kicks over the top. His job was just to get in there, pass the ball, and he did that well. I think somebody said he maybe had a box kick that didn't go well at one stage, but you know, not everybody can be Conor Murray. But Gibson Park came in and they would have been delighted with how he did.
If you're going to pick up one box kick that he made a mess of, that's, I take that any day. You want your scrum half to come in, especially given the pressure, given the publicity that it's received. Gibson Park, get his catch and pass and all his basics done, get the ball away, organise the forwards, control them, and he did it perfectly.
Yep. Right, that was the good side of the weekend. Then Munster played.
We're out of time now, aren't we? Isn't it?
Yeah. Is that it? That's the end of the show. That was a serious first 20 from Racing.
Yeah, Munster just got absolutely blown away, and it was just like all their functions seemed to fail. Everything that they'd normally fall back on failed. Racing had them worked out to perfection. They targeted them where they thought they were weak and where they thought they were soft. And we might talk about leaders later on, but like, they just went after Munster's big players, neutralised them, and then went after what they looked as the weak spots. And look at Teddy Tamai. He just made hay. And we'll talk about a good few more players, but like Fakawada was absolutely brilliant, and Siobhansi as well. Like, so, like, you know, that first half was just, you felt this, they could have been absolutely pumped. Like, it could have been, they could have racked up 50. Like, it was that serious at the start for Massing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with some of the stuff that Pat said. But you kind of, like, Munster, that was just a disaster start in terms of Munster's game plan would have been, let's make this a real cup match, let's make this a shit fight, because that's what we want to do sometimes, you know. Like, it's just frustrate the French, because we know they tire, we've targeted them, but that start, they just, I don't know whether people are going to look into why, what happened. You got to give complete credit to the French, but like, were they just a bit slow? You expect Munster to be that pumped emotionally. I know people don't want to hear about the emotionally charged. Everyone has to be cold head and concise and controlled and gone out there, but sometimes a bit of passion comes out there. You need to start with passion, you know, control the whole atmosphere, play your way into the game. But they were just stuck in the starting blocks a little bit, and it's extremely frustrating when you're chasing points then from whatever 23 minutes was it, and you know, like, it's, you're in the back foot straight away. And the way Munster set out to play, it's not that style of rugby.
No, and the three tries, I mean, they all have something in common, which is someone simply being done either on the outside or with a step inside, and the common person is Teddy Tamai. So Teddy Tamai, we've seen him, he's in form this season, but he first try does Whitman on the outside. Second try is a thing of beauty. That Fakatawa step inside on the halfway line is gorgeous.
Yeah, I think when you see the replay of it, it's like, just for a big man, the subtlety of being able to step off that right foot and get past Conor Murray quite easily. Like, you know, and sometimes you kind of have to go, okay, was it bad defence? Or no, it's not. It's actually just great attack. And sometimes things are undefendable, you know?
Yeah, because that was it. Like, because you don't often see Conor Murray miss, and he just almost fresh aired him. Like, he evaded him that quickly. And then you had John Klein was, you know, he was just all, he was a half a step behind, and he reached out and he couldn't hold on to him, and then Tamai was gone, and Wooten was left behind as well, so Conway couldn't do much about it. He had to take Fakawada as well. Like, so he just burned into them. And it's just this kind of, like, I know France wouldn't have won the Six Nations or anything like that, but you know, they took a stance on Thomas as well, and you know, well, they ultimately paid the price. Like, but if he had been there for the rest of the Six Nations, France could have, you know, put a bit more of a fight. But then the third again was just, you know, it was just sensational as well. And maybe, I think we were just chatting a bit beforehand, you might explain more how he seemed to wrong foot every single Munster player.
Yeah, I think on that, it's like it gets to a stage where the guys are working so hard for each other within that group that you see a little break and you see Teddy Thomas, sorry, one of the danger players that they have. You've identified that previously, and when you think that he's just going to go on the outside because he's gone on the outside beforehand, you're nearly just working, they're all working so hard for each other that it's nearly someone needs to step back and kind of have a minute and kind of go, well, what happens if he steps back? Because I think it's three or four players that actually get done on the step that they've gone for the corner.
The angle from behind the goal is remarkable. Yeah. You know, he turns and the Munster players are still going.
Yeah.
They're still drifting, they're still pegging it to the corner flag.
They've got the blinkers on, you know, it's just like, get to that corner, stop it, because that's where they're going.
Yeah.
And normally you'd expect if someone steps back on the inside that you might have someone trailing on the inside, but to actually do four lads, or if not more, like on the step.
Is there, would that, I know it's like would have, could have, but is that a sign that just, you know, they're already, it's 20 minutes into the game, they're already that far behind, it's a bit of panic, it's a bit of redhead, you know?
Yeah, maybe it's something along those lines, but they're just, it's also, they're just trying to do something, make an impact, make a tackle, do something to get them back into the game. You need big moments. In these big games, you need a big moment. Someone needs to make a big turnover and make a big tackle, step up and make something happen, you know, and they're working hard to do that, but nearly overly working. And it's just, like, it was still a great finish to have that step and to accelerate it, but what's he doing when he gets over the try line is absolutely absurd. Like, I was, what are you doing?
It's, you know, it's crazy. Utterly mad. I mean, Maxime could have easily dropped that ball, if he was, or turned around, or anything.
If he comes in to high five, he comes in to jump on him to celebrate, he gets a ball in the chest, knock on, it's like, what are you doing? To score a try, it's a hat-trick. I'm not sure, like, I don't know if they spoke to him afterwards.
Yeah, you'd love to find out
in
why,
in the press conference. What are you thinking? Okay, you're not thinking, probably, but like, I do enjoy the way he plays with a smile on his face, and you can see how Zeebo's going to thrive over there, you know, in that atmosphere. But what's he doing?
This is why we're not French, Jim.
Yeah. Certainly not myself. But yeah, no, it's, yeah, look, that laissez-faire attitude comes back again.
Jesus, I mean, on another day, that is one of the all-time balls up clips.
Yeah, like, you know, I imagine because then they would have had themselves kind of doubting themselves, and then Munster would have been like, we've got out of jail here. And it could have, because you could see, like, if you watch the slow motion, like, there's a split second where Machinel is just like I have to catch this thing here now, because I think maybe he even thought he had put it down, like, because he'd almost gone over, stopped, and then turned around.
So
the boys might have even thought, like, as he scored this, you would have just be following up and support, and it could have been a disaster, but it wasn't. And then I think that's what we talked about, why they all raced over so much. It could just be a trust issue then, where they don't trust Wootton then to make that tackle, so then they're overcompensating as well.
Like, it mightn't even be, because I know there's obviously a spotlight on Wootton over Zeebo as a selection decision. Less so with Marshall and Scannell, but certainly the Wootton one stands out.
Yeah.
And there was always going to be a discussion about that, win or lose, because it was a very, very, very big call.
Yeah.
But beside that, it just really had the look of people just like, I need to get to that corner, and not thinking in terms of team and perhaps just communication. But who knows? But at that point, right, so however it led to it, at that point, it's pretty much game over.
Yeah.
And Racing just said, yeah, well, Grant, we'll light up a couple of smokes and defend for the rest of the game.
Yeah, which was, from my end of things, I was like, what are they doing? They can actually rack up a score here. If they keep going here, they weren't getting much of a reaction from the Munster guys, we can blitz this and make it, like, because we looked at the day before and it was like, wow, we wouldn't have seen that scoreline beforehand. But again, same with this, I actually thought this was going to be even the closest game of the two, and could have been which it turned out to be, but it could have been a hell of a lot worse for Munster, you know. And going forward, the French can't do that in the final, but to back themselves, the way they defended. Again, I know we should kind of focus on Munster, but you've got to give such credit to the French. The way they chopped tackle, they came off the line with such ferocity, line speed. Munster just looked confused, bamboozled a little bit in terms of, like, oh shit, they're coming up here. A little bit of panic set in, perhaps. The accuracy of passes wasn't there. A lot of balls went to ground. They kind of got in. They kind of did what Munster do to teams, and they got in amongst them. They rattled them and made them become individuals when Munster, as collectively, are way stronger. Mm. And just credit to the coaching staff again at Racing, and be it Dunner's in there as well, having the chat about, look, if we can frustrate them. But to sit back in the line, I think Munster missed a few tricks, to not score before half time.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought everyone should have known their jobs in terms of, okay, we're going to be very aggressive at picking and going. We're going to be very close. We're going to be very Munster-esque in the 22. And yet, if someone's going to pick and go, you got to have someone with them. And the French, again, were targeting breakdown and getting a lot of joy.
Yeah, this game is going to mislead future generations when they look back, because they'll see 27-22. They'll see Munster with 69% possession and with 77% territory. But anyone who actually watched the game at the time or who watches the tape in future will know that this game was over.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
It was an absolute walloping. And that contrast is interesting, Jimmy. Like, Racing really did look as if they were just sitting back. They sent Dan Carter on for a bit of tackle practice.
Yeah, and like we talked about it last week, about when's he going to come on, what's he going to do? And he came on, and he wouldn't be renowned for his tackling prowess, but he made one superb tackle on a fresh Simon Zeebo from a backfield kick. Zeebo's running, and you're kind of going, a Zeebo in full flight against an elderly Dan Carter, but made a textbook tackle, and it's just stopped Munster's momentum every time. Okay, we'll look at some of the incidents that perhaps may have gone on. Robin Copeland's or Zeebo's pass to Robin Copeland was a forward, was a borderline, but still the French just seemed in complete control.
You were saying that it looked worse than it was.
Yeah, I think when someone's running at that pace, and to put, Robin Copeland was a good bit away from him, and to get that pass is extremely difficult skill. But to give it more zip, to give it more power, you can see Simon Zeebo pulls backwards just to get, like a tennis shot, I guess, kind of get the forehand into
to follow through.
Correct. Yeah. But he pulls away from the line and to cut across it, and he pulls back, and his hands go across, and it just looks worse. It looks like he pulls out of it, and it looks forward straight away when it leaves his hand. I'd like to see it again, because I didn't actually focus on it too long. But look, again, we're clutching at a couple of things when, oh, what could have been? But like Conway's try at the end, sure, there's no fullback, there's no one at home. Like, it's done, you know. Like, they've,
it's game over.
Yeah, and they've switched off. And if it was closer, I don't think that they would get these opportunities.
The one I'd love to see was if the clock had still been running, would Munster have had the nous to say to the referee, who was Irish, we're refusing any conversion for a try. Straight back. You know, because again, heat of battle stuff, these are the big decisions, but it wasn't to be. Ian Keighley didn't have his best game, which is a pity, because he's had a hell of a season.
Yeah.
And perhaps that drop goal attempt was a summary, and the touch kick that missed from penalty. It just wasn't a great.
Yeah,
it wasn't a great day at the office.
Because I remember, like, against Leicester when they played at Welford Road, he kind of had a penalty that didn't go to touch as well, and then but rebounded from that and did really well. But he had a bad start and just never recovered from it as well. And that was the one. Like, it's that whole phase of play where they got the penalty that was very kickable, around the 22, and they decided to go for the line, attacking line out, and then after two or maybe three phases max, they just thought for some reason we're going to drop in front of the goal. Like, what was the point of then kicking for the line here if you weren't going to go through the phases and put them under pressure? But I think James has kind of said it, you know, right there. It's like the pressure that Racing put on them made sure that Munster started playing like individuals. So guys were making their own plays, going, we're getting knocked back here, I have to do something, rather than kind of trusting each other and saying, let's just keep hold on to the ball. I don't know why they went after three phases to go for a drop goal. Poorly executed. I think it was Benaroo got out. It was one of the forwards got out and blocked it down. And then they were kind of scrambling backwards. And then you had Scannell just kind of, maybe because he saw they were backpedaling, they're back in the 22. I'm going to take a shot at goal here. And just a comedy of errors.
So sometimes you're in a position like that, just for to kind of maybe look at the mindset of why you're going to try and take your points. You're talking cup games. sometimes there's a momentum that needs to be stopped, so you just need to get in the scoreboard regardless of how you get there, because ultimately if you're going to get a couple of points it could be the difference, and normally in a cup semi-final you expect it to be tight. So if you get into the green zone of a 22, you need to come out with some points, and you want to come out with some points. So if you're banging your head against the wall and you're getting nowhere, just keep the scoreboard taking over, because if you get a drop goal, you get two drop goals or a penalty and drop goal, that's 6 points. There's your try, like, and you're working your balls off to try and get that 5 points.
Yeah.
But if you can get an easy three point, you're just eating away into the, like, you're getting yourself back into it, especially at that stage. You know, it's just small things in mindset of, right, we're in here, let's get points, let's get back and go again. You know,
I think the piece about I think that's really interesting what you say about the mentality aspect of just getting any sort of points at that stage. Because there was still plenty of time.
Yeah.
It's, the execution was the problem with that one. It just looked all wrong. And on a different day, Keatley's brain is going to work differently. He's going to say, "Is not."
Yeah.
You know, and we just try again. This is not on this time, but that was not happening.
He was almost under the post. You know, it wasn't like he was dropped back a couple of yards. That had to
go straight up in the air.
Yeah. You know?
Okay, and I said we did mention that there was an Irish ref. That was definitely picked up by the French media for the game. That even though JP Doyle works for the RFU, he was refereeing an Irish team. And I want to compliment referee where it's due. The man can speak a bit of French.
Yeah, apparently he's gone back and did an A-level French.
Yeah.
And he could hear it, and I thought he communicated extremely well with both sides. And I've had JP as a ref loads of times, and sometimes, like, I used to try and use a bit of Irish influence over him, you know, and just have a chat with him before and stuff like that.
Did it work?
Because I was going to say, sometimes the ref is so... has it in the back of his mind that he nearly goes against, not saying he does, but you can go against your natural thing that, oh, everyone's going to expect me to go with the Irish team here, and you nearly look to go the other way to kind of...
So is this where the Munster fans are waking up blaming the Leinsterman for their defeat?
Do you think, like, it wasn't that controversial in the end, but like the idea of like Reece Marshall, do you think his try should have been chalked off because he ran straight at Doyle and then didn't get tackled?
Use him as a buffer completely. And I thought, again, JP Doyle, funny comment, like, going, oh, well played, you used me as a buffer. You can't use that. It was cute, it was smart, but maybe on another day with a not as reliant or aware referee, you might get away with it. But that was, look, you have to come back for that, to be honest.
Right. Joining us on the line now is Dunica Ryan, fresh off a semi-final win yesterday. Dunica, how are you?
Good, thanks. Good. A bit sore and stiff, but not too bad.
Was the match yesterday a match like any other, or was that a bit different?
A lot different. As I said before, it's really like playing against Munster is a really strange situation. All the players so well, you know their habits, and what they're trying to do. And even yesterday, you know, they were creating things on the pitch that you really had to be sharp on. It was obviously, you know, massive high pressure game. Just even coming in the bus beforehand, just hearing the fields of Etten-Roy and all the supporters hit the side of the bus, you know, it was just fantastic. I think even our players fell off that as well. And it was just a great day. And all, I think both sets of supporters really were, you know, really enjoying the sunshine, and obviously had a good lot of wine taken in, which was great. It was a very tough game on the pitch, and it was pretty hot now, especially for myself.
Did someone really throw a slither down onto the pitch when you went over to the Munster fans?
Yeah, they did. I don't know if he throwing it to me or trying to hop it off my head. I normally use a hockey ball as a trigger point for recovery, and my hockey balls have been missing inside the club, so I've been using a slitter, so I know nobody has a slitter So I've been using that, and someone picked up on it recently enough for one reason or another. But so they fired an in-air rogue slit onto the pitch, and so thankfully enough now I've dived two of them now, so they can go for a few pucks without the risk of losing it. So it's good.
In terms of homework before the game, it looked as if Racing had done a serious job on Munster's lineout.
I don't know. We do a lot of lineouts during the week. Our coach Lauren Travis, he tries to do a lot of every movement that the opposition do. Tries to you know, do it in training, and it can get quite a bit long. But I suppose, sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you don't. You know, and we were able to get a couple of theirs yesterday, and you know, just as I said, like some days you get lucky, some days you don't. But I thought, like, you know, there are so many lineups there, you know, your percentages of probability you're actually getting one of them do go up, so you hope to get one or two, but they got a good few hours as well, and just got sort of caliber of jumpers and throwers that are in there. It was a really good contest, and some of them come off, some of the players come off, and some of them don't. But luckily, we had a few good ones yesterday.
Hey Dunners, Jimmy here. Just like you talk about luck and no luck there, but certainly something that wasn't luck was just the way you defended, that ferocity that you brought. And I think you look at the chop tackles and how you targeted that breakdown. Was that a huge focus during the week?
We learned massively from the Urena game, which, like, we are probably, for a honest chat of ourselves, we were lucky to win. That once when after first phase ball, they literally could have done anything they wanted after on the next phase. So we really tried to bear up and really target the first breakdown, I suppose. And it kind of allowed our forwards to get a fold. So it's like, suppose like any team, really, if you're able to, you know, ourselves, if you bear up at 12, you're able to, the forwards are able to fold around a lot easier. But if it's a soak tackle, the forwards have to go an extra 5 yards deeper to try and get the fold. And, you know, and the way Munster was so well drilled, and the presentation for the ball from Murray, it's very, very hard to defend. So I think that was a big plus for us yesterday, and something I think that really helped us in the first half. At the end of the first half, I should say, and going into the second half, and it was really good, but there's definitely areas of our defence we need to work on, you know, to try and build towards going to the final.
There's an image there, like, that was I think Sportsfile took it, of just the Munster lads all just having a conference under the posts when the third try was scored, and some of the guys looked shell shocked, some of the guys trying to take water on as well. But what are you thinking then when Machinot was lining that up and you guys are 21 points to 3 up after 21 minutes? What's going through your head?
That's what I was thinking, is what the hell is Tilly Thomas doing firing the ball back? Machinot under the post. Don't forget Cass, because you know, a bit of a mistake against Cass away, and it's kind of cost us. But he's an unbelievably talented player, Teddy, and God, like, he can create something out of nothing. It's just, even seeing him in training, it's unbelievable to see, and he's a great talent, and he's, you know, he's such an extrovert guy. He's always happy-go-lucky. You know, even in the dressing room to the day, and he'd skateboard going around the change room, and you're like, God, would you take it easy in case somebody got injured or something? But that's the way he is, and he's a very happy-go-lucky guy. But I think from our point of view, you know, that was just our purple patch. We just got very lucky, and I think just on the outside, and obviously Teddy stepped in, and for his to hit, stepped in off not too unbelievable the sidesteps, and I was able to get under the post. But we knew once we're going to come back hard, like, you know, they're unbelievably well drilled and very, very fit guys as well. And I think what was telling was we're able to hold out that was just before half time, and that really, really helped us a lot, and to give us a bit of momentum going in at half time.
And Dunica, I was going to say, Dunica, after the game, then did you guys ask him why he threw the ball away to Mascheneaux? Did he have an explanation or a reason why?
No, he's just
French.
having the crack,
exactly. It's going to be an interesting one there, Dunners, when you have Zeebo and him together, because I was just going to say they'll be trying to outdo each other each week coming into training.
Exactly, there'll be loads of Zumba going on in the weights room now the two lads dancing at the whole time. To be honest, they're good mates. They've actually gone on holidays together, I think before down Brits, and he's a young guy, and it's actually, you know, and supporters love it as well, and look, it's just literally just expressing how he plays, I suppose, and he's their own. So it was unbelievable talent to do that. I'm sure Max is delighted to get a very easy try, but I was early, I had a bit of a heart attack myself when he fired it back. It was really good for us to hold out just before half time, and I think just that 3 points at the start of the second half was very, very important. Like, it was just kind of just to get us on the board, which was that's disappointing from our point of view, was the performance attack wise after that. Like, we lost so many ball in contact afterwards, we tried to offload too much, and I think that was the most disappointing part of it. Like, you know, we didn't really attack it more, and in the second half than we would have liked, and something we're probably going to have to look at today in the video.
I was going to say something about that, Dunners, because it looked to me that if you kept going the way you'd gone the first half, it was going to be like, geez, you could have gone up to 50 points, but it looked as if you were kind of like happy with the lead you had, and you were just kind of holding on. You didn't fire a shot second half, really. Was it something said at half time just to kind of, I know you, just before the end of the first half you had a great defensive effort, but then from second half was it something said that, right, we'll just hold on here now and see it out, or you just, nothing happened, or was this Munster brought it to you, or what was it?
It's strange, Jimmy, because sometimes they just turn it on, let's just turn it on the next minute. It's a lot of the games we've done this season, we've literally turned it on for about 10 minutes, and then literally the next rest of them we coast along, which kind of is one game we've really put it together was the Claremont home game, where we pumped them about 60 points, and sometimes I think it's a real work on for us. I think it was just, you know, we have the players, the capability to do it, is just to keep doing the basics well. And I think sometimes I think when guys, and it's just the French mentality as well, is that when they're a few points ahead, they literally will try the 80-20 pass, the 90-10% pass, that's, you know, won't stick, and they'll go for it. And we tried to do that a few times. I think extend there with a bit of Fijian blood with Leone trying to offload with three lads hanging out of him. That happened twice. That really were massive momentum swingers from our point of view. And you know, it just gave Munster a bit of belief. And then when they get that try, and we kicked off the restart. Like, you know, when you see. I think it was Robin Coburn made a massive break up the park then after the restart. Murray, and then he whipped it across the Gobbler, I think, and then James Cronin offloading. The Munster really were, they were the show, if they'd score immediately there again. But okay, that's the thing. I think that we have switched off at times this year, and I think it's definitely something we have to work on, you know, when we don't have a purpose, that we're able to, you know, cause as much damage to ourselves, I think.
Right, well, listen, congratulations on making the final against Leinster, May 12th. We look forward to seeing you play there. Thank you, Donnacha Ryan.
Thanks very much. Cheers, thanks.
Coming up next, Keith Earls is popping into the studio for a chat with Pat.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
Welcome back to The Hard Yards. I'm Pat McCarry, and I'm delighted to be joined in studio today by none other than Keith Earls. Keith, how are you getting on after a tough old weekend?
I've been a lot better, Pat. Unfortunately, bad circumstances and we're here, you know.
Yeah, but what is it? We might just rip off that Band-Aid and get the Munster game out of the way first. You know, we were lucky to be chatting there with Donnacha Ryan there about the game, and just a lovely image of you guys hugging it out at the end. Like, at the end of it all, it's just, you know, you must be happy to see him progress, but gutted for yourselves. It must have been a tough one to take.
Yeah, it was. You know, that was my sixth European semi-final. And it doesn't get any easier. I'm obviously great friends with Donnacha. Massive respect for him. And, you know, you could nearly see by him he was sickened for us, you know, because no matter who he plays for, he's still a true Munster man. And I think if Racing didn't have Donnacha Ryan yesterday, we probably would have won.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I know I was saying Nianga was getting a lot of the credit for getting his hands on a couple of lineouts, but you probably suspect that Donnacha was one of the architects behind that piece being targeted so much.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think between Donnacha and Billy and Pete over the last couple of years, they would have had obviously a massive hand on the Munster lineout, and, you know, they'd know each other inside out, and I suppose Donnacha and Billy having a bit of mind games during the week. But he was massive for him, and even I think it was just before half time we had a line out, and CJ went through the middle line out, and lo and behold, it's Donnacha who tackles him just before the line, you know. And I think if he wasn't there, I don't think the French teams do as much research or analysis as teams, and Donnacha Ryan's a freak when it comes to that stuff.
The last thing before I kind of move off that game, and we will never speak of it again here for the next chat, is the that walk to the dressing rooms. Like, Munster put it up beforehand. It's almost like a kilometre. Like, what are you guys thinking about when you're getting up there at half time? Are you guys trying to process information and chat about details on the way, or is it just head down, get back to the dressing room as quick as you can?
Yeah, no, obviously there was a bit of chatting going on, but I think the main thing was because of the heat, we were getting fluids on quite quick. We were getting ice packs on our neck and cold towels over our head, and I suppose just reflecting on what had happened, and I suppose what messages we could give to each other to start the second half better.
And I suppose now, just moving away from that, last time I spoke to yourself, I think you were coming back from one of the injuries. Me and you were chatting down at Thomond Park, and a couple of years back, and you came back. You're flying form, and great season for Ireland and Munster there as well. Possibly one of your best in years, although you were good last season as well. But I remember speaking to you about your father, Jair, who played as well, played for Munster, but never kind of got that cap for Ireland. A lot of Munster fans would say he deserved to play for Ireland as well. Just tell me a little bit what it was like to see. Like, you probably would have watched him when you were real younger as a player, but do you remember seeing much of his games when you were growing up?
Yeah, that's all I remember as a young fella is going to these games. And, you know, I used to do the kick and tee for you once, or I used to run out to Aidan O'Halloran and Mick Lynch, you know, when they were playing in the AIL. I went to every training session with my father. He took me to away games. It's all I remember. I was constantly with him, like, you know, and the AIL was huge back then, and I suppose he probably was a big name and known as a hard man, and I was just delighted and I suppose proud to be his son and be around him.
And do you look at it now, like, he's a guy, like, he played, I think, a couple of years, but he would have stayed maybe amateur when it went professional as well, but a guy who maybe deserved, if the game had been a professional, to have a nice life for himself and stuff, but yet he had to still work away, and now only like 10-15 years on, you were the son and you got to live that professional life. It's kind of weird the way two different kind of lives went. He could have maybe deserved to be that guy earning decent money and stuff for himself as well.
Yeah, I've had plenty of chats with him about it, you know, what you hear rumours about his, where he was from. He had a couple of tattoos and, you know, but I suppose if you ask my father himself, he told me he probably could have worked a bit harder himself. You know, he probably, you know, I think his friends and where he came from meant a lot to him, and, you know, playing rugby and going out for a few points afterwards was all he wanted, you know. And I suppose going to his local pub, you know, drinking was a big culture back then. But, you know, yeah, I do personally think myself, because I was old enough watching him, and I remember certain players getting called in ahead of him and he just couldn't believe it. But look, I don't think we'll ever know why he didn't get capped or he didn't get more games for Munster. But if you ask him, he'll probably be a bit too humble and say he could have worked harder. But, you know, from living with him, I think he, you know, he worked hard. He built a gym out the back of our house.
Oh, really?
and stuff like that. So, but as I said, yeah, he'll be too humble and say he could have worked harder and probably led off the drink a small bit more.
It's a funny thing, like, you know, when you often talk with certain players, you might say the Dubliner or whatever. It's often for Keith Earls, it's like the Moy Ross native or Keith Earls from. It's almost linked with who you are as well. What was it kind of like growing up there? You know, is it still somewhere that you kind of, you know, live close to, or you kind of live nearby, have friends from the area as well?
Yeah, obviously, you know, my parents don't live there anymore. They're living in Meelick, but you have to pass Moy Ross to get out there. And I'd often take the left turn and go up and have a look at my old house or whatever, but it's half the place it used to be now with the regeneration that came in a couple of years ago, you know, and knocked a lot of houses and been told more houses were going to be built, and that didn't happen. So, like, I'm on the other side of the city now. It's close to training, and I've been out there with my wife now close to 10 years, and look, we love it out there. I'd probably, the house I'm in now, you know, we built it 2 years ago, and it's our house for life now, you know. But as I said, I still do have lots of fond memories growing up in Moy Ross, and I enjoy meeting people when I'm driving through, and some of the characters and some of the lads I'd grown up with, but we went separate ways.
It's funny, actually, because I was saying, I was reading the Bruce Springsteen book recently, and he still goes back to his old neighbourhood and drives around it, and just to get a feel for the place as well. So it probably never leaves you. Yeah, but the thing I wanted to go back is, like, we're here chatting to you today because you're up for Zurich Players Player of the Year awards, and you're here to kind of talk about those awards. But before we go on to that, I wanted to go back to last summer. Unlucky not to make that Lions squad. You're probably kind of gutted not to make it because you're in good form as well, but you buckled down, went away on that summer tour, and you're thrown in there with another lad on the other wing called Jacob Stockdale. And I talked to him at the start of the season for the Hard Yards, and he said that you're absolutely, like, brilliant to him in terms of giving your time up and giving him advice as well. What has it been like to kind of, for yourself to go on that tour and also to kind of see these young lads coming through as well?
Yeah, look, it's brilliant to get on any Irish tour, you know, and rack up the caps. But that tour was probably one of the best tours I was on, you know. And I think personally, you know, to kind of help out young lads who, you know, I would have been young going on a couple of Churchill Cups, and, you know, having a couple of fellas help me out, and, you know, I suppose returning the favour to younger lads now. And he's had a phenomenal season, and he's up for the Zurich Young Player of the Year as well. So, you know, there's, I think, James Ryan is there as well, like,
yeah,
you know,
Jordan, yeah.
And, like, when you're leaving out the likes of
Dan Levy, was mentioned, yeah.
Dan Levy and, you know, Rory Scanlon, Blown Munster, you know, there's so many, and I think Irish rugby's in a great place at the moment. And but getting back to that tour, yeah, it was brilliant working with the younger lads, and I suppose getting to know them before a lot of the Lions players, and they ask me what they're about, and I'm telling them, you're going to know all about it when you see them. And it was great that a lot of them were involved in the Grand Slam this year.
Yeah, that's it, because like it's the thing that Stockdale mentioned as well, is that at the end he had the jersey, and he said you gave him a jersey at the end to say go and swap that if you have to, like just kind of a nice little touch. Was there ever somebody who would do that with you when you first broke into the Ireland team that was kind of put you under the wing?
Yeah, look, it's your first cap and you get two jerseys, like, and you kind of, you know, I would have given one to my parents, obviously, and another one to my aunt, and Jacob was going in swapping his one, and he's obviously had a few, and I was just thinking it would be nice for his parents to have one, and I suppose him for to keep one himself. But I actually got that from Dunnock Ryan. Dunnock used to always do that for a new capper as well, you know, and I thought it was a lovely touch, and I suppose it's something that we're doing now, like, you know, and it's a precious thing, you know, and having to swap your first Irish jersey, you know, you want to hold on to, but then you play against someone you respect, you'd like their jersey as well, and, you know, just an opportunity to help him out.
Yeah, it's good. And the, like, I suppose the thing is, we see, talk to Dunica, he was saying he's a new father there as well, and I was even at the Aviva, you saw the likes of Sean Cronin and Devin Toner bringing out their kids as well, and we saw Paul O'Connell, you did it near the end of his career. How good is that? Would you do it often, like for the big games, or would you kind of like having the family around, getting the, you know, your young ones into the dressing room and stuff at the end of games?
Yeah, it's great having them around, you know, and, you know, my wife dragged them around the whole Six Nations, you know. I think I should give my medal to her for what she goes through, because she's heavily pregnant now again, third. So, you know, it's great having them around. Like, and I know it can be, I suppose, not hassle, like, but tough getting a 2-year-old on a flight and a 6-year-old and feeding them and organising everything. But when I'm at home now and I'm looking at the mental piece and I see them walking around with me when I'm holding the cup, you know, they're memories that can never be taken away from us now.
And that's it, like the tour coming up to Australia as well, like there'll be, you know, I was only talking to somebody that's, you know, we might from afar say let's rest up some of these lads, let's rest Sexton or Murray or something like that, but you guys are probably all telling Joe Schmidt I'm good to go to Australia, like have ordered the family quickly, but I'm going off to Australia for 3 weeks.
Yeah definitely, you know, there's any chance to put on, if you're going to the moon to play for Ireland, you want to be there, you know. And look, we'll get a couple of weeks off at the end of the season, you know, and I think fellas are mad to go on tour and mad to keep playing games, is because we're well looked after here as well, you know. And, you know, Joe and the coaches and the provinces have a good relationship that we're not put out there week in, week out, and, you know, keeps us fresh and keeps us chomping at the bit.
And for, in terms of Munster now, I know, I think Pete O'Mahony was saying after the game you're sick and tired of learning lessons and stuff, but you have an Inter-Pro coming up, you've got the Pro 14 to focus on as well. That's got to be the thing now for you guys, where, you know, this is all the chips are going in on the Pro 14 and you want to get to a final and beyond.
Yeah, you know, and Pete's dead right, you know, we can't put our finger on what's going on with us in Europe and when we get to these big games, you know. But we'll have a look at the game yesterday and see how we can improve, and as you said, a massive game against Ulster this weekend and potentially a quarter final against Ulster or Edinburgh and potentially a semi final against Leinster, you know. So there's plenty of massive games to play for, and there is a trophy at the end of the season, you know, and that's something we'll go hard at.
And yourself and Robbie Henshaw, two guys made almost miracle recoveries. We were almost writing you off until the end of the season. But just how did you get back so quickly? Like, what kind of work was done in the background to get you fit again?
Yeah, I think I was blessed that, you know, Munster were in South Africa and there was one of our physios left behind, Ray McGinley, and, you know, a lot of credit has to go to him, because, you know, I had one-on-one treatment with him for 2 weeks. The lads were away, and, you know, we got back a week earlier than expected, you know. And look, and Robbie's the same. I think it's all about being professional. And I was asked a question there, when you get injured, I think a couple of years ago, fellas used to relax and say, look, I'm not going to be playing for a couple of weeks, whereas now you're you know, you're more busy and you're trying to find ways how you get back earlier, if it's between eating or if it's between extra massages or extra physio. And I've no doubt that's what Robbie done as well, because I know him well and he's a phenomenal professional. And I suppose he was a bit of a freak the weekend as well for a fellow who was out for 10 weeks, you know.
And then, as we mentioned there just earlier, the yourself, Tadhg Furlong, Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton, all up for the Zurich Rugby Players Ireland Player of the Year Award. That's coming up in Dublin next month, isn't it? So if now you got nominated, is that kind of a nudge to Johan and say, can I come up for the ceremony next month as well?
Yeah, look, it's great to be nominated, you know, by the players in Ireland. And look, it's tough competition between three Lions players, you know, and I think the three of them lads have been no problem being European or World Player of the Year. They've all been phenomenal, and look, it's been an honour to be up there with them. But look, it's gold medals I'm after at the end of the season, not individual awards.
Oh, good stuff. All right, listen, great stuff, Keith. Nice having you in. Thanks for coming on to the show, and best of luck for the rest of the season. Andy and James are back to talk to Pro 14 Permutations, and we'll also take a look at your listener questions.
The Hard Yards.
Now, when the cups are decided, you have fine weather, but that's probably a 2-month period. You have to do the Hard Yards.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
Excuse the pun.
No, that's perfect. We're both going to use that now.
I'm on a bonus for that, definitely. Yeah. Get that in.
The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards.
On Sports Joe.
Welcome back to The Hard Yards. We are looking forward to the final round of Pro 14 League games. There's a few teams locked in and there's a few teams not locked in. So we're going to go through what it would be now. So the Pro 14 playoffs as of today, if nothing changed, would be Leinster get a bye into the semis versus the winner of Munster at home to Edinburgh. And it would be Glasgow at home with a bye into the semis versus Scarlets at home to Cheetahs. Now, in Conference A, Glasgow are locked in at first. Munster are locked in second. Cheetahs are 5 ahead of Cardiff. Cardiff can overtake Cheetahs. If Cardiff get a bonus point win and Cheetahs get no match points, because the tiebreaker in the Pro 14 is wins, not points difference.
That's the motto around
it catches
here.
People every year.
Wins, not points difference.
Yeah. So a lot of people's beds are made once it gets to tight on match.
These are the
points.
Small things that really piss Andy off.
Yes, they do.
Tries. Why don't people understand this? It's wins.
I love looking at this. Conference B, Leinster are essentially locked into first, so we're going to treat them as locked. Mm. Second, third, fourth, Scarlets, Edinburgh, Ulster. Scarlets 65 points, Edinburgh 64, Ulster now on 60 after a couple of big wins.
Yeah.
They've, in fairness to them, season of turmoil, they've put themselves in an interesting place. Scarlets and Edinburgh have the tiebreaker. Okay, Edinburgh actually have more wins than Scarlets as of now, so Scarlets cannot take it easy away to Dragons. They need to lock up a win and preferably a bonus point to stop bad things happening. Edinburgh, if they got a bonus point at home to Glasgow, give themselves a really, really good chance of good things happening and getting into that second place, which would be a home semi-final. Ulster are at 60 points. Ulster would need to, they need to do big things against Munster away.
Yeah,
be interesting to see how Munster respond.
And the Pro 14 is the only thing they have going for them now as well. So yep. Yeah,
it is. So we'll see how all this works out. The likely Champions Cup playoff as of now is Ulster against Ospreys for that final slot. So that's it. So that's the zip through. How do we feel about that?
Yeah, some interesting permutations there. I expect a lot of it to stay as is, to be honest. Expect Edinburgh to win against Glasgow. It'll be close, but I expect them to win. I don't know, Ulster, Munster, it's going to be tough. Again, there's a lot of things we've got to take into account there, how Munster are going to react. Ulster have something to play for, of course, but
like Ulster right now are on what you would consider a run.
Yeah. I think it's, is it too little too late? Probably, but I expect them just to, like, they'll have that playoff. Hey, who did you mention? Who's home ground or home?
So Scarlets away to Dragons, Edinburgh at home to Glasgow.
Oh, no, yeah, but I mean, if it comes into the playoff.
Sorry. Okay, so Munster, as of now, it's be Munster being their homes, their second place in Conference A, and they play the third place in Conference B. right? Mm. So right now that would be Edinburgh. Okay. And then it'd be Scarlets, who are currently second, versus Cheetahs, who are currently third in Conference A, right?
Yeah.
So Edinburgh are playing to essentially play Cheetahs at home versus playing Munster away. Right?
Yeah, okay.
So they've got
a huge card.
Huge card. And Glasgow have nothing to play for. They're locked in. So they've got, you know, okay, we don't want to get whooped by our rivals, but they've got nothing to play for here. So this will be interesting this weekend.
Yeah, I can still see Glasgow winning that though.
You could.
Yeah.
Especially on the performance against Ulster.
They certainly
wouldn't have been happy with that. Anyway.
No.
And as I say.
And Ulster are losing a couple of players to retirement. Tommy Bowe got a great reception when he came on.
Yeah, good to see at the end of that game, yeah.
Yeah, and Paul Marshall has announced his intention to retire as well. So, James Downey's one-word tributes to retiring players, right? Mull. One-word tribute to Mull.
Horse.
John Muldoon, horse. Tommy Bowe.
Tommy stuff. Phenomenon.
Phenomenon. Okay. Paul Marshall?
Beagle.
Why?
Nickname.
Okay. Dunico O'Callaghan.
That is. General.
General. Okay. Interesting. Jimmy doesn't have to explain these. Apparently.
Thank God.
Moving on to the social media questions. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at THY Rugby and use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to send us in a question for next week. Okay. There was a really interesting piece by Peter O'Reilly in the Sunday Times that said that Joe Schmidt and David Nussafora arrived at Leinster HQ last week and told Leo, brought him into a dark room and said, one of Joey Carberry or Ross Byrne is going to be at Ulster next season. You have to call. Peter is reporting that Leinster were not best pleased by the timing of this visit, as you might imagine, Champions Cup weekend. But this is now something a little more solid than the previous chats that we've been having. So we've got a few questions in about this. I'm going to ask the one from Sean Reynolds. Are Ulster better to take Byrne as a solid established 10 who can tutor McPhillips or take a potentially more risky option in Carberry due to his relative inexperience at 10? It would fill the Pieto void nicely and gives Ulster a similar situation to Leinster for positional play. Gentlemen, what's the better move here? Is it Ross Byrne or is it Joey Carberry going north?
Well, what's the better move for who? For Ulster? It's 100% Ross Byrne.
Yeah?
Yeah. When Johnny's away, he's the guy who steps up and he's so consistent in how he plays. You never talk about Ross Byrne really having a bad game because he does everything percentage-wise. He's very safe, kicks his goals. It's the type of 10 that Ulster need at the moment. If I was Leo, I'd nearly prefer if Joey went. Because when Johnny's away, Ross plays. Are you going to have Joey? Ross is going to be involved as well consistently with Leinster. Carby's going to be away. Johnny's going to be away. So if you're losing two 10s, you have to blood through another 10. Who's that? Be that Colin Marsh or whoever's Kieran Frawley's there now as well. So for me, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's the safe option. It's the right option if they did have a choice. I don't think either player would particularly want to leave, to be honest, because they're both established in how they're doing things. But I think it's a tough one because someone's going to have to be forced to go somewhere. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, Pat, now, but
yeah, I was just, like, thinking for someone like Carberry, like, he's probably looking at Sexton thinking Sexton might just go up to the World Cup, you know, 2019, so he just had to hang on for another season and then he's the man who's going to be Leinster number 10 and, you know, get a bit more game time next season. So yeah, you'd be livid if you were told that you were going to have to head up north, especially to a team that are been a mess for the last season as well. Like, and you're going to have to, you know, pack your bags and head up the road. So you wouldn't be happy with it at all, but at the same time, Ulster would absolutely love that. You know, imagine just getting someone like Joey Carberry handed to you as well and just saying, okay, he's the man again. But and then McPhillips might step in during those international windows as well. So, you know, at least you might have Marty Moore and Geordie Murphy there for a bit of company as well. Like, but, you know, this would be a real sign of, like, people often think, does Joe Schmidt call the shots for the provinces? But if you see one of these boys heading up north, you know that that's not Leinster's decision as well. So it'll be a very interesting dynamic for the next couple of years.
And it's an interesting, with my Ireland hat on, you kind of go, right? And thinking Joe Schmidt wise, and Joe Schmidt's been on both sides of this in terms of he's been Leinster coach, he knows what it's like when I want this player, and it's like when you're in charge of your province, it's like, no, I'm in charge, I'm controlling this. I want Joey to go and play, because if he's back up 10, yeah, you want him to play consistently regardless. That's what Ireland, with my Ireland hat on, I was like, okay, send Joey.
Mm. Yeah. And you'd also want him kicking.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is an interesting one. That used to happen with Ruan Pienaar and Paddy Jackson. You'd see why is Paddy Jackson not kicking? Well, it's because Ruan's better. We'd have the same thing if Carberry goes north.
Yeah, Cooney's kicking extremely well. Why would you disrupt that?
So from the Ulster perspective, you want Cooney to keep doing what he's doing. You want Carberry to be a playmaker. Mm. From the Ireland perspective, you want Carberry kicking.
Yeah, of course.
It's going to be, whatever happens, this is going to be very, very interesting
because I'm sure both players have been spoken to and said, would you like to? And they've obviously kind of gone, let me think about it, and kind of who's going to blink first between the two of them until someone goes.
You'd wonder about the unions, the players' union involved as well. Like, you know, are they making sure that there's players' rights is too strong a term, right? But you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
It was like, because I was just thinking, it was like the time the government tried to decentralise and kick everybody out of Dublin, and then everybody
civil service
were like, that ain't happening. Like, so yeah, you know, same thing. Like, you know, what you know, does the union get involved and kind of say
it's for the greater good, lads? Come on, right. We've talked about the, well, actually, this is an aspect of the Copeland try, or that wasn't, from Owen Hayes. Would JP stroke Barnes letting that Copeland try play run on have A, resulted in a try, i.e. no forward pass on TMO, and B, affected the final result, or would Racing have woken up? Should it have run on?
If it did run on, say for argument's sake, yeah, it's a kick up the backside, but it's momentum in the game. But I think that the Racing side were just too far ahead regardless. But no, I don't think they should have gone back for TMOs. I prefer a referee to make a decision. I think we saw both referees made calls without going to TMO and as quick. No, grand, done.
Okay.
It definitely would have made for a good finish though, because that would have been two tries in the space of 3 or 4 minutes. So it would have been a grandstand finish then at that stage. But it's a shame they didn't just go back and have a look at it. But they must have, Doyle's looking at Barnes. Barnes is in line.
He's made the call. Yeah, you got to trust him. It's that team. But also, I just thought of there was another one when Robin Copeland made a little break and he did a dummy pass, and if he'd probably hit Earlsey, he might have been away in the second half when they're chasing there. So opportunities missed.
Yep. Charlie O'Brien, did Steph Evans leave a little bit on Fergus McFadden when he scored just on half time? For my money, yes he did, and he absolutely knew what he was doing, and there's no place for it. But I know that I might be in a minority here.
There's no place for it. I think if I have, okay, it was a little bit late. It's not blatantly late. We've seen a lot more of when someone's run around by the posts and someone blatant knees in the back, or, you know, and they've scored a try and then someone slides in. For my tuppence worth, I want my defender to try and make an effort. Give a shot. What happens if there's a slight percent that he can knock that on or drop it or go into touch or whatever? And
so here's my counter.
Go on.
He's sliding in with his knees. So if McFadden does drop the ball, that's a penalty try.
You think?
Yeah.
Because he slid in with his knees. But if he's sliding in, if he's sliding in to hold, okay, but if he's sliding in to try and hold it up, but what way is he going to tackle? Oh, chop him, and like, doesn't a chop tackle is no good there.
But
he's got to go in high.
But you can't go into your feet like.
Yeah, but he's just trying to get him at an impact. He's gone low to the ground. He's dived. What's he going to do? Like, I think for me, I don't see anything wrong with it. That one, I do think it's a bad, it's a horrible dead leg, or maybe it's more. I don't know, but it's just a corker. He catches him completely wrong. If it's wet weather, it's going to look even horrendous because he's just going to spin around probably, and you know,
like a top.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, but I want my winger to go in there, and I don't want him to ease off. Like,
okay. Okay,
but I can see your merits to your argument as well.
You're just being nice,
yeah, but I win.
Right, we're running tight, so we'll leave it there. Make sure to use the hashtag #AskTHY if you want to get a question in for next week. So thanks to Pat, Jimmy Dunica and Keith, to Alan McNan for producing, and Shane Dempsey and Dermot Cronin were on production. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. It is not an All-Ireland Champions Cup final. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.